state officials improve computer security after a health department server is hacked. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also tell you about a murder-suicide near Superior.
And on Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program, news director Sally Mock talks with lead newspaper reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison about the effectiveness of attack ads and the importance of voting in next week's primary election. Montana officials say hackers have had access to the Department of Public Health and Human Services computer server since last July. That server contains personal information about the agency's clients and employee payroll information, including Social Security numbers and bank account information. Information technology employees noticed suspicious activity on the server on May 15. A forensic investigation confirmed it a week later. DPHHS Director Richard Opper says that so far it appears none of the sensitive information has been illicitly used.
The information is still there and in the same form that it's always been there. So it was not manipulated, which was good. We have not seen any spikes in identity thefts or people getting into other people's bank accounts and taking money. And I suspect if that had been the intent of these hackers, I don't know what the intent was, we would have seen spikes in that kind of activity. Now, unfortunately, the forensic analysis can't prove this information wasn't accessed. So that leaves us in a position where we have certainly a moral obligation, if not a legal one, to act with the utmost of caution and do everything we can to protect people who might have had information on this server.
The server has been shut down. A new server containing pre-scanned and determined to be safe files is being brought back online. Opper says investigators are working furiously to determine how many people have been affected by the security breach. He says that's proving to be a very challenging process.
Because we have dozens and dozens of different programs that some people may be served by. They may be served by several different programs. They may have many, many different records on this server. And we have to go through the process of identifying who those people are, assimilating them into one database from hundreds of databases that are on this server, and making sure that we get rid of all the duplicate names of people who are listed, because some people may have information, for example, if they were immunized, and if they are on Medicaid, if they receive SNAP benefits, food stamps, basically, they'll be listed. But ultimately, when we contact them, we don't want to have to send them 3 or 4 or 5 or 12 letters.
Hopper says he and everyone at DPHHS apologizes for this hacking incident and are working hard to find out what exactly happened and to make sure it doesn't happen again. That said, he adds hacking is a worldwide industry that's far bigger than most of us realize.
It targets university systems, it targets corporate America, and the state's IT system, not just for DPHHS, but statewide. Actually, last estimate I saw, there are 500 million, with a B, attempts at unauthorized access to the servers for the state system every month. That's 17,000 an hour. Just as with our system of antibiotics, continue to try to stay one step ahead of evolving bacteria. Hacker technology is evolving all the time.
Opper says the health department will provide clients and staff whose information has been compromised an opportunity to sign up for free credit monitoring and identity theft protection services for up to a year. More information on this incident can be found at dphhs.mt.gov. A toll-free telephone hotline has also been established for anyone with questions. That number is 1-800-809-2956.
And in other news from around the state, the deaths of two people found at a rural residence near Superior appear to be a murder-suicide. The State Justice Department says the bodies of 87-year-old Emma Lane and her husband, 85-year-old husband John Lane, were found at the residence midday Wednesday. Officers of the Division of Criminal Investigation and Mineral County authorities determined Emma Lane died of a single gunshot wound, and John Lane shot himself. The Montana Department of Justice spokesman John Barnes says it's too soon to determine the motive behind the shooting.
At this point, we don't have anything that we can put on the record regarding that. As I say, the investigation is still continuing, and our agents are really good at putting together crime scene and really assessing all of the circumstances, everything that might be involved, reaching out to anybody who might need to be interviewed, and putting together a complete picture as complete as possible that goes into the case file. So still ongoing at this point.
The Lanes were found after an out-of-state relative asked a neighbor to check on them.
The Montana Attorney General's office is urging the state Supreme Court to stand by a recent ruling that would send a former teacher back to prison for raping his 14-year-old student. Attorneys for Stacey Dean Rambold are seeking a new hearing on the ruling that said the former Billings senior high school teacher should serve at least 2 more years in prison. Rambold's attorneys argue that District Judge G. Todd Ball was right to factor in the girl's conduct when he handed down a 1-month prison sentence last year. Assistant Attorney General Tammy Plubel responded today that no blame can be attached to the girl under state law. She committed suicide while the case was pending. Rambold pleaded guilty to sexual intercourse without consent after authorities say he repeatedly sexually victimized the girl.
Veterans Affairs Montana health care system officials won't address the timing of the director's decision to step down this summer. VA officials announced yesterday Christine Gregory would retire at the end of June to spend more time with her family. She will have spent 16 months as Montana Systems Director. Spokesman Randy Martin said today Gregory will not speak to the media about her decision. Martin declined to answer questions about whether Gregory's retirement is related to the federal investigation's findings of problems in the nationwide healthcare system. Instead, Martin referred to yesterday's VA statement that says Gregory is retiring after 32 years and the decision is a personal one. National VA Secretary Eric Shinseki resigned today amid allegations of treatment delays and preventable deaths around the country.
A U.S. Supreme Court ruling requiring states to look beyond an intelligence test score in borderline cases of mental disability to determine whether a death row inmate is eligible to be executed could have ramifications for at least one Idaho prisoner. The justices ruled Tuesday that Florida and a handful of other states cannot rely solely on an IQ score above 70 to bar an inmate from claiming mental disability. Gerald Pizzuto Jr. has been on Idaho's death row since 1986. He appealed, saying that his IQ was below 70, making it illegal for the state to execute him. KTVB-TV reports that Idaho courts and the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected his claim. Pizzuto's IQ was measured at 72 when he was 29. Idaho law also requires he show he had a low IQ before he turned 18.
A Kalispell man who pleaded guilty to theft, forgery, selling drugs, and stealing a military uniform and medals has been sentenced to 5 years in prison. The Daily Interlake reports 25-year-old Sean Smith was sentenced on May 13th. Smith pleaded guilty to felony theft for stealing tools and other items, criminal distribution of heroin, and 2 felony charges of forging checks. A Kalispell Municipal Court judge earlier sentenced Smith to 30 days in jail and 120 days on probation for the January theft of a shadow box containing a military uniform and medals belonging to a deceased Vietnam War veteran. Police recovered the medals belonging to James Smith, including a Purple Heart, and returned them to his brother, Greg Smith. The uniform was not recovered. Sean Smith was not related to the brothers.
The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has donated $25,000 to the State Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to help the agency better determine the number of wolves in Montana. The money will pay for GPS radio collars and related equipment needed to help the state determine the size of wolf pack territories in different parts of the state. The collars also collect information on wolf movement. RMEF President David Allen says if the state has more accurate information on the wolf population, it can, quote, manage the population downward, unquote. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimated there were 625 wolves in 147 packs in Montana in 2012. FWP spokesman Ron Osheim says the agency's new population model predicted more than 800 wolves in 165 packs.
A Billings man who tried to float down the flooding Yellowstone River on a log quickly ended up in the rushing water and was carried about a mile downstream before he was able to get to shore. The Yellowstone County Sheriff's Office located 24-year-old Rob Chapo shortly after 5:30 p.m. yesterday and pulled him into a rescue boat. His friend called 911 about 30 minutes earlier. Lieutenant Kent O'Donnell says Chapo told officers he had been drinking with a friend near a fishing access when he decided to try to float down the river on a log. The log soon rolled, throwing Chapo into the water. U.S. Geological Survey data indicated the river was discharging about 60,000 cubic feet per second and was about a foot below flood stage.
Washington State is one of a handful of places where a national measles outbreak has hit record levels this year. According to the Seattle Times, 15 cases of measles have been reported in Washington State since January. The last spike in Washington of the viral respiratory disease that has spread through the air was in 2008, when Grant County had 19 cases. State health officials report 10 of the people who came down with measles in Washington had opted out of getting vaccinated for philosophical, medical, or religious reasons. Only one person has been hospitalized.
Welcome to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's Capitol reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mock.
Well, Chuck, the five Republican House candidates debated this week, and one of the five, Ryan Zinke, had to feel a little picked on.
Yes, Ryan Zinke was the target of several of the candidates over some of his stands, and I think particularly Corey Stapleton was questioning Zinke's conservative credentials, whether his talk in the campaign really matches his voting record as a state senator for two sessions. And he was also getting attacked by some of the other candidates. And some of this might be that Zinke, at least according to some private polls, was the leader. Whether he still is, I don't know. But he is definitely getting a lot of incoming from some of his fellow Republicans. And also, as we've mentioned in the past, some of the former Republican chairmen have gone after Zinke, saying he's not really a conservative Republican.
And really, they've gone after him because they have accused him of not being really a good enough Republican. And Zinke followed that with an editorial where he decried the idea of party purity and that he thought there should be more tolerance for difference in the party.
Yes, and you know, this is always a discussion in primarily the Republican Party, whether there's a litmus test that you have to be with the conservative principles on A, B, C, D, E, and F, or if you aren't on C and D, whether you're worthy of the nomination. And the other side of that coin is, well, which candidate is the best one to win in November? And I think some of Zinke's supporters have said, This is the candidate who could win the general election race, whereas maybe some of the candidates on the farther right cannot. We'll see. You know, Zinke's raised the most money in the election so far and spent a lot of it. And his theme is primarily his own background. I'm a Navy SEAL. I'm conservative. That's in shorthand what he's saying. And some of the others are questioning the the conservative claims and matching it up against how he voted.
It's certainly one of the more interesting races in this primary. And of course, the other interesting race and big race is the Senate race, Mike. And Democrat John Walsh seems to be taking the brunt of attacks in that race.
Yeah, I would say so. We have Steve Daines, who's the Republican House Representative from Montana and the presumed winner of the primary election, and has raised $4 million already. And he's using it to go after Walsh and beat him up already. He's not going to wait for him to win the primary or not. He's doing it right now. And then we also have Walsh getting a little bit of incoming flack from his competitors in the Democratic primary, the one who has enough money to do so, Dirk Adams, a rancher from Wilsall. He has an ad up right now, too.
Well, let's listen to these ads, and we'll start with the ad from Steve Daines.
I'm Steve Daines, and I approve this message.
When John Walsh was the head of the Department of Military Affairs, his agency was criticized for mismanaging tax dollars. Government auditors gave Walsh's agency poor marks. His agency failed to monitor $19 million of federal grants and charged taxpayers for work its employees never did. Now he's in Washington, voting with Obama to put America deeper in debt. John Walsh, failing Montana, following Obama.
And this ad, Mike, tries to paint John Walsh as incompetent.
Well, it talks about this audit that there's actually a couple of audits done when he was the Adjutant General, head of Department of Military Affairs, and they were managing, as the ad says, about $19 million in federal grants from the Department of Homeland Security. And it's true that they did ding them for a lot of problems. The main problem was they didn't have a good monitoring program in place. But it should be pointed out that there's never any question about where this money was going. I mean, they know where it was going. It was going to local governments in Montana. It was going to state agencies. So it wasn't like people were, you know, stealing the money or grossly mismanaging it, as the ad says. They just didn't really have the proper contract monitoring program that was in place that they were told a couple of years before that they needed to get in place. And so a lot of these problems were fairly minor, like saying they didn't spend the money quickly enough, or that there was a small contract that didn't follow certain procurement guidelines. You know, like I said, it was a lot of things that they weren't doing well and that they fixed under John Walsh.
And, of course, the tone of the ad, though, is very effective because it's got this dire music and then flashing on these sort of accusations. I mean, those attack ads, everyone decries them, but they work.
Well, yes, they do work. And also, probably the most important part of the ad, I think, was the very end where they said, following Obama, this is what you're going to hear the entire campaign. John Walsh, Barack Obama. John Walsh, Barack Obama. This guy's a clone. He's Barack Obama's man in Washington. Yeah, that's, if I was a Republican, I'd do that too.
Well, there's another ad, as you mentioned earlier, attacking Senator Walsh, and this comes from one of his Democratic opponents, Dirk Adams.
I'm just not sure if John Walsh understands how Social Security works.
He's open to privatizing Social Security for young people.
Do you think there would ever be a circumstance where privatization of Social Security would make sense?
I'd have to take a look at all the options, you know, but not for those that are currently in Social Security right now. I could see, you know, maybe if there may be an option where they take a look at it for new employees coming onto the workforce.
Social Security can never be privatized. John Walsh doesn't understand that the young people who pay into the program now are helping fund seniors who draw benefits. You can count on me never to turn your Social Security over to Wall Street. I'll protect Social Security, and I understand how it works. I'm Dirk Adams. I'm running for the U.S. Senate, and I approve this message.
And, Mike, this ad says Walsh wants to privatize Social Security, and that's something that Senator Walsh denies.
That's correct. And I think what happened here is there was a TV interview in Great Falls about a month ago. That's where this statement came from. And it's slightly edited. But even the full version, you listen to it and you go, what does Walsh mean? What's he talking about? It's kind of a confusing statement where he doesn't really state clearly that I'm against privatization of Social Security. Since then, his campaign has told me and said, look, he's against privatizing Social Security. He would never vote to do that. And so I think this moment of kind of confusion or kind of an odd statement he made, they're saying, look, you know, that's here's where our stand is. And also this ad, I think one of the flaws of this ad is that Dirk Adams comes on and starts talking and he doesn't identify himself right at the bat and says, I'm Dirk Adams. I'm a candidate for the U.S. Senate. He does it at the end. So I think someone watching it will see him come on and go, well, who is this guy? And so I think that's a little bit of a flaw. And as far as the statement that Walsh made, I think that statement could come back to haunt him in the future because it is kind of a confusing, ambivalent statement.
Well, that is, of course, as we said, one of the premier races. But, Chuck, there are a lot of races, especially in the legislative races, that are really important for Montana's future policy and decisions. In some of those races, there's no opponent to face in the general election. And so the primary race will determine the winner in some of the local and legislative races.
That's definitely the case, Sally, and particularly in some of these Republican primaries where the so-called reasonable or responsible Republicans, the folks that sided with Democrats on some key issues in the 2013 session, are facing some pretty hard challenges from the right. Lots of dark money is being used to buy mailers and ads and that sort of thing. So the nature of the Montana legislature could change depending on what happens in these races. They're very important races.
But there is historically a low turnout for primaries, and it's never been easier to vote than it is now, though, with ballots that you can mail in.
That's correct, Sally. And I was just speaking with Secretary of State Linda McCullough, and she said a record number of absentee votes have been sent out to Montanans, a little more than 198,000. We'll see how many of them come in. Historically, primaries are low turnout affairs, and off-year elections, the primaries in those years are even more scarcely voted. And so looking at past statistics, I would bet we're looking at the low 30% range for turnout unless something unusual happens.
Well, we will know next Tuesday. And guys, this is our last campaign beat of the primary season and my last day as news director. But I am going to come back next fall and do campaign beat with you guys because it's too fun to miss.
We feel the same way. I look forward to doing that.
We'll miss you, Sally, but we'll look forward to seeing you in the fall.
All right. Chuck and Mike, thank you all so much.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison and Montana Public Radio's Sally Mogg. Thanks for listening.
And now for tonight's forecast. In Troy, it's 78 degrees. In Deer Lodge, it's 71. In Cascade, it's 82 degrees, and in Twin Bridges, it's 72, and in Darby, it's 74 degrees. West of the Divide, today, look for mostly sunny skies, highs in the 70s, and tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms carrying on in through the afternoon and evening, highs in the upper 60s and 70s. Sunday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms, lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s, highs upper 60s to mid-70s. In central Montana, the rest of the day calls for sunny skies, highs 70 to 75. Tonight, expect increasing clouds, then scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows 45 to 50. Tomorrow, look for cloudy skies with showers and thunderstorms likely, highs 65 to 70. Sunday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows 40 to 50, highs 60 to 65. And in southwest Montana, expect partly cloudy skies the rest of the day, and then isolated showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 70 to 75. Tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows 40 to 45. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies, showers and thunderstorms are likely, highs 65 to 70. On Sunday, expect mostly cloudy skies, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows 35 to 45, highs 55 to 65. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Roberts.
The Affordable Care Act, also called the ACA or Obamacare, is quickly becoming the new normal in health insurance. By April, over 8 million people nationally had been enrolled through state-based, or more commonly, the federal exchange at healthcare.gov. Predictions are that in another year, almost twice that number, or 15 million people, would be getting health insurance through these marketplaces. As opposed to what we've been seeing over the past 20 years, the number of people in our country without health insurance is finally decreasing. Although it takes time, people without health insurance are beginning to understand that they can now afford to get this coverage. As the penalties for not purchasing this insurance take effect next tax season and go up the following year, we can expect more people to take the steps to get enrolled and get covered. Now, with the online site becoming even more functional, there are fewer technical reasons not to enroll. Based on what we've seen so far, it's increasingly difficult to argue that this new law is not working. Sure, we can expect to hear a lot more during this next election cycle about repealing Obamacare. This media approach is designed to get the Republican base fired up for midterms, but doesn't have any basis in reality. Whatever you want to call it, the changes that are embodied in this law are here to stay. We are not going back to a time when people with pre-existing medical problems are refused health insurance. And anyone who thinks about the problem understands that in order to provide everyone with insurance, everyone has to contribute something, even the healthy ones. This is the very basic idea behind the Affordable Care Act. We as a country are beginning to understand that it makes sense. Another sign of the times is that even the health insurance companies themselves are beginning to see that it's working. Instead of sitting on the sidelines like some did in 2014, many insurance companies are planning to expand their insurance products into new states in 2015. Insurance competition is actually increasing, something that we haven't seen a lot of before now. And insurance rates look like they'll be relatively stable, without signs of major increases we have seen in the past. Predictions about just the sick buying and everyone else avoiding the health insurance marketplace don't seem to be coming true. Hospitals are beginning to get into the act as well. Up until now, many of them, especially the nonprofits, have had fairly generous charitable care policies. These are going to get tighter. If you have the opportunity and the financial ability under the ACA to purchase subsidized health insurance, but choose not to, you will soon be expected to pay a bigger portion of your bill. This seems only reasonable. Personal choice includes personal responsibility. It seems very likely that more hospitals and other providers will be following this approach over time. Many of us know that we in Montana and a number of other states have left out an important group of people who simply don't qualify for any health care coverage. People here who are earning less than 100% of the federal poverty level have no health insurance options unless they happen to fall into a group that is covered under traditional Medicaid. Initially, it looked like our only approach was to try and get our legislature to put this group directly into an expanded Medicaid program. This is still a remote possibility, but what is becoming clearer is that we have other options that make good sense. Arkansas and a number of other states have shown us that it is possible to put most of these people into the regular private health insurance by paying their premiums with federal money. Medically frail people who need extra attention and support can still go into the traditional Medicaid program, but this is only about 10% of the group that are under the federal poverty limit. In fact, Arkansas is seeing a decrease in their traditional Medicaid program. Many of the people who had been covered by Medicaid are now getting insurance through the regular exchange marketplace there. And some who had been with Medicaid can now go back to work without fear of losing their family's health insurance coverage. Although we in Montana and some other states may continue to drag our feet, the handwriting is on the wall. Obamacare is here to stay because it makes sense. And sooner or later, even our own legislature is going to have to admit that there are good options for providing all Montanans with health insurance. The only question is whether we will get there sooner rather than later.
Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. And best wishes to Sally Mock and her retirement. Thank you for being our news director.